Okay, tonight's topic is Melachim Beis Perek Hey, Melachim 2, Chapter 5, and this is the story of Naaman, Elisha, pride and humility. At least that's what I'm calling it now. Now, the story over here is well known. Naaman is a general of Aram. Naaman is a great person. Naaman has one failing, which is that he has sarat. He has leprosy. Naaman apparently is distressed by this. There is a young girl who had been a captive woman. She had been a Jewish girl who was taken captive, and she was working for Naaman's wife. This young girl tells Naaman's wife, who tells Naaman that maybe he should go to the prophet in Israel who will cure him. So what happens is that he goes and he speaks to the king, and the king sends a letter to the Jewish king, and the Jewish king gets the letter. He says, oh my gosh, terrible letter, like they're starting up a war with me. We'll follow along in a few minutes. And then what happens is eventually Elisha hears, because the king heard about this and he tore his garments, he says a terrible thing. Eventually Elisha hears, Elisha says, send him to me, right? So the Naaman goes to Elisha. Elisha says, go in the Yarden River 7 times, you'll be cured. He says, why do I need to go in the Yarden River?
Didn't we
learn
this before?
What?
Didn't we learn this? Sounds awful.
That's a famous story.
No.
What? The Haftorah of Adria, that's true.
You expected something more magical.
Right.
So, you would expect maybe something more magical. This seems like a low-grade miracle. And maybe that's why Naaman is not happy. And Naaman says, I want something big, etc. And he says, you know, if it's just going in the river, I got better rivers. But Naaman's little servants say, listen, the prophet said it, do it. He does it, he gets cured, and eventually Naaman, at the end of the parak, seems to really believe in God to some limited extent, which we'll talk about, which is also a fascinating idea. Elisha refuses a gift from Naaman, but Elisha's little guy, Gehazi goes and he wants the gift. Elisha gets upset. Elisha says, okay, you know what, the tzara'as, the leprosy, or however we translate tzara'as, that Naaman had, should go on you, Gehazi. End of story. Now, what is the lesson of this story?
Several lessons.
So there are hundreds of lessons, dozens of lessons, but what we will do is, following along the lines of Alex Israel, we are going to note that the key to this story is the question of who's the boss. Who's the boss? Right? And this question comes up in many different ways. It comes up in terms of Naaman himself. Is Naaman the boss, or is the king the boss? It comes up in terms of the king of Israel and Elisha. It comes up with Elisha and God. It comes up with Elisha and Naaman. And we have
Gehazi. And Elisha and Gehazi.
And Gehazi also, in some ways, falls into the trap of thinking that he's the boss, and Elisha puts him into place at the end. And what we will have to do is we will have to follow along to create this story. Okay?
Also, he thinks he can monetize everything.
He can
monetize?
Yeah.
He thinks he can monetize everything.
He likes money, apparently. He is a... It's a great movie.
Yeah, but...
Okay. Yeah. Fine. Let's go through this perek, make a few points. Okay, Naaman Sarzeva Melech Aram. Right, Naaman, the general of Aram, Haya Ish Gadol. He's a big person, Lifnei Adonav. Now, a few points. Point one is, if I begin by saying he's an Ish Gadol, Ish Gadol means he's powerful. Lifnei Adonav basically chops him down a notch. The word Lifnei always means that you stand in front of someone else. That means someone else is really the boss, right? If I would say he's an Ish Gadol, that means he's great, he's powerful. But when I say he's Ish Gadol Lifnei Adonav, means he's a great guy, his master, he's right? Because he stands in front of his master. So Naaman, right, might be a powerful person, but Naaman is only Lifnei Adonav. Naaman is only great with his master, in front of his master. Now, Naaman is Gibar Chayo Mitzorah. He is a mighty person, but he's a leper. Right? The entire Pasuk, basically, whenever we praise Naaman, we knock him down. And on a certain level, the idea that we're trying to mention is that, okay, you say you're great, we're going to knock you down. No? Hashem is Mashpil Geim. The high people, Hashem is Magbi Ashvalim. If you're low, God brings you up. If you're high, God knocks you down. So whenever we talk about Naaman's greatness, we knock him down. Now, this word Lifnei is an interesting word because look how many times it appears in this parak. I tried to bold some of them. Naaman is Lifnei Adonav. Actually, here, we'll do one more point. Pasuk Beis. Aram has many bands. And they captured from the Jews Na'ara Ketana Vatihi Lifnei Eshat Naaman. Now, there's a parallelism. Naaman is a great guy. He's Ish Gadol. The opposite of being an Ish Gadol in some ways is being a Na'ara Ketana, a little girl. Who really had the power in this story? Does Naaman have the power? Or does this little girl who what? This little girl who is able to treat him or to give him the advice that would treat him, she's the one that has the power. Right? The Navi is trying to strip Naaman's power down. You're an Ish Gadol, but it's the Na'ara Ketana who builds you up. Now, let's just take this idea one step further. Pasuk Yudalit. After Naaman goes in the river and he, right, he's healed. So he goes down. Vayir vayipo vayardim sheva pa'amim kidvar ish alokim vayasha v'saro kibsar na'ar katon. Right? You see that? His skin becomes like the skin of a little boy. It's like baby skin, no? But the play over here, to go from Ish Gadol and have a Na'ara Ketana putting you, repairing you, and then you become a Na'ar Katon, that basically is teaching you, don't think you have the power. The real power is somewhere else. You are just a little lad. Right? His skin becomes the skin of a little lad. Okay. Now, continuing on the theme of Lifnei. Lifnei repeats how many times in this parak? I believe it's 7. Okay? Naaman is an Ish Gadol Lifnei Adonav. Right? Pasuk Beis. The Na'ara Ketana stands Lifnei Eshes Naaman. Right? There's a hierarchy. Right? What do we call it? An imbalance of power. No?
Yep.
She's the little girl, but she has someone on top of her. Right? And she says, Vatome Ogivirta Achalei Adoni, would my Lord beseech Lifnei Hanavi Asher B'Shomron? Right? She's saying that the real power is the Navi's power. Lifnei, who are you really in front of? You're really in front of the Navi. You're really in front of the Navi. And then, Oz Yasof Oso Mitzarato, then the Tzarat will go away. Now, the word Yasof, by the way, means, in the Mefarshim comment over here, that The word Ye'asof means that you'll be gathered into the people. A Mitzora, and you mentioned, right, Richard, that this is the Haftorah of Hazria. A Mitzora is out of the camp. Ye'asof oto mitzarato means we gather you into the camp. You're now brought to be part of the people once again. That's the idea that's going on. Now, by the way, Naaman. Why is Naaman such a great guy? How did Naaman become a great general?
He won an important battle.
What was the battle that he won?
The Jews and Aram and who? And Israel and Yehuda and Aram were fighting.
Yeah, okay. And look at Rashi. At the... Rashi writes, "Hu mashach bekeshet litumo v'harag et achav." What does that mean? In that war, if you remember, the only person who was killed was the king, was Achav, right? How was Achav killed? Because somebody haphazardly shoots an arrow, and that arrow strikes Achav and kills him. Who's the guy who haphazardly shot the arrow? Mashach bekeshet litumo. That's Naaman. Now, what this is really showing on a certain level is Naaman is priding himself as being, I am mighty Naaman. First of all, he gets Tzara'at. Tzara'at comes to strip him down, to prove that you are nothing. Now, you should have realized that you're nothing, because the only way you were ever successful is by freak occurrence. Right? You should never have taken pride in yourself. The only reason why, right? So we're knocking Naaman down. By the way, the Medrash writes, and this Medrash might be the key to everything, it's the last source on page 4. Again, I do not go in order with my source sheets. If you think I do go in order, you haven't heard too many shiurim from me. So the Medrash writes, Mikan Reb Yehuda Halevi Bar Shalom Al Yud Aluf Dvarim Hatzarat Ba'a. Right, Tzaras comes, we usually speak about Tzaras and Lashon Hara, right, the Rabbi Klapper thing. But Tzaras comes for 11 different Averos. Right, it comes to cursing God, Gilei Arayish, Yichus Damim, and one of them is Gasas Haruach. One of them is, Gasas Haruach means haughtiness. Pride. And who is the source that of Gasas Haruach? Look two lines before the end. The source of Gasas Haruach that causes Tzaras is Naaman. Naaman is Gas Ruach. Naaman is Hori. Now, the issue with Naaman is he views himself being great, and we need this little girl to prove to him he's not so great. If you go on in the parak, by the way, just following the Lifnei theme a few more times, Pasuk Tesvav, okay? After Naaman goes to the Jordan River and he gets healed, right? Elisha says, go to the river, he goes. So then Naaman stands in front of Elisha. Vayashav el-ish alakim hu v'chol machanehu. Now, what does that mean? Naaman appears to Elisha with his entire entourage. That means even after being healed, he shows up with an entourage. And he comes to Elisha. Hu v'chol machanehu. But, vayavo vayamod lefanav. And then he has to come and stand in front of him. No? And he stands in front of him, and it says he recognizes that God is really sovereign. That's the story. Now, Elisha refused to meet Naaman at the beginning. No? Naaman comes, and Elisha doesn't go out to meet him, right? Elisha stays home. And here, Naaman says, Pasuk Ches and Tes, right? Pasuk Tes, right? Naaman comes, and he stands at the door of Elisha's house. And then Elisha sends a messenger to Naaman. Elisha doesn't go out himself. He sends a messenger, and the messenger is, you should go in 7 times. And Naaman is very flirty. He don't like being in touch with messengers. He wants direct communication. So Pasuk Yirah, he gets all angry. Vayiktsov Naaman vayilach. He gets furious and he goes away. And he says, Hine amarti elai yitze yatso. I thought he would come out to meet me. I'm the general. He's a lowly Jew boy. He's just a prophet. Elai yitze yatso. Right? And I thought, Amad v'karab Hashem Hashem lokav, I thought that he would do a great process. What does Elisha do? He stays at home, sends a message, go to the Jordan River 7 times. That's not miraculous. That's nothing.
It's not flashy.
Not flashy. Go bathe. You tell me I'm go bathe. So Naaman says, so he's supposed to come out to me and he is supposed to call in God's name and do big stuff. But he doesn't want to do that. Right? But he doesn't want to do that. And Naaman is furious because Naaman is conceited, haughty, arrogant. So we got to knock his arrogance out of him. And by finally appearing in front of Elisha, maybe that knocks his arrogance out of him, but not completely. It's only, right, here, Pasuk Tesvav. So Naaman comes to Elisha, and he stands in front of Elisha, and he says, I recognize that there's God. Right? And then, right, Naaman says, the end of Tesvav, take a present, take a gift. So what does Elisha say? Tesayin. I am not going to take any gift. He swears, I will not take any gift. Naaman badgers him and he refuses. Now, look at the same theme, standing in front of whom? Effectively, Naaman stands in front of Elisha. So he recognizes Elisha's sovereignty now. And he says, let me give you a gift. Giving you a gift is a sign that you are a ruler. Elisha said, that's not how it works. I'm not the ruler. Who's the real ruler? In the hierarchy, Chai Hashem Hashamati Lefanav. Right? This Mila Mancha, this leitmotif, right? This word that repeats again and again and again, or it's not exactly a word, it's more a concept. What this does is this shows, hey, listen, right? The real boss is God. Right? And that's what Elisha is trying to say. So effectively, one theme over here is the theme of who's the boss. And that's what the pasuk keeps on saying. Another way, by the way, to look at the theme of who's the boss, is another word that repeats again and again in this perek, and that's the word Adon, master. Right? Who's really the master keeps on repeating also. You could go through the perek and look for the word Adon, and you'll see the same type of thing as the word Lifnei. The idea is who's really the boss, right? And that's fine. Oh. Now, the king of Aram, let's just continue, we'll make a few more points about this perek. The king of Aram, in Pasuk Hey, verse 5, so he says, go and I will send a letter to the king of Israel, and then he gives him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 gold, and 10 new suits. Right? That's the story. Now, one second. Little girl said that the person who can take care of the tzara'as is Elisha. Why on earth is the king making a diplomatic event out of this? Why is the king sending a letter to the king of Yisrael? Let the king send the letter to Elisha.
No.
Why not?
They're not on the same status in the eyes of the king of Aram.
So in the eyes of the king of Aram, the prophet is someone who works for the king. In the non-Jewish world, a prophet works for the king. So the non-Jewish king says, oh, if I want to access the prophet, I got to go through the king. But part of the lesson of Elisha is to say, no, I don't work for no king. Right? I work for God. Right? And that's the undercurrent over here also. Right? The king said, fine. Now, the king sends this massive gift with a letter, Pasuk Vav. The letter comes to the king of Yisrael, and the letter says, when you get this letter, you will receive my servant Naaman va'asafto mitzarato, and you will take Naaman away from his tzarat. What's missing in this? Did anyone ever read any diplomatic letters? Is this the way a diplomatic letter reads?
No.
Right? When you get this letter, Naaman will come and he will take away your tzarat. End of letter. How does a diplomatic letter usually begin and end? To the great ruler of Saxony, Burgundy, and all other colors of pants. To the esteemed so-and-so, right, peace unto you, I hope that your family is well, and your wife's rheumatoid arthritis has been healed. Right? You begin with some small talk, pray, isn't that a diplomatic letter, Lev? Right? How do you write a diplomatic letter? You write a letter, maybe you have to doctor it up.
Sometimes.
Okay, all the time. Well, over here, this is matter of fact. This letter comes, and the letter says, when you get this letter, my general Naaman is coming, take away his tzaraat. Why would I write a letter matter of factly instead of with all the praise?
Because
you
don't think you need to suck up to him.
It's a power thing, right?
Sorry.
He just said it nicer.
Right?
Right? It's a power thing.
He doesn't think he has to suck up.
Now, basically, the king of Aram is telling the king of Yisrael, you work for me! You're my vassal. When my boss wants me to do something, he says, do it!
Right.
Right? He doesn't say, to the esteem, willing to the esteem nothing. You're a shikyingle. Do it! Right? So the king of Aram is putting the king of Yisrael into his place. Again, this perek is about power, hierarchy, structure. Who's the boss? Right? King of Aram is saying, I'm the boss. Well, now you understand why the king of Yisrael is scared to death. He gets a letter like this without any diplomatic anything. Now, by the way, the Radak points out that maybe there was diplomatic niceties in the letter, but it's omitted in the Tanakh. Tanakh doesn't say anything. The Tanakh doesn't say everything. But we could argue that maybe there's no diplomatic niceties, and that's why he is saying, oh my gosh, this is really scary. He wants to start a war. Because if he's asserting his power, that's the way you start a war. And if you're asserting your power and you're telling me to do something that I can't do, get rid of his tzarat, and I can't do that, that's an alibi to start a war.
But what's the deal with all the money?
What?
What's the money for?
What's the money for? So the money might be money for the prophet, not for the king. Right? Because remember, there are two things going on over here. I want Naaman to be healed, so right, I have a prophet who will heal him. The prophet will get all the money. The king reads this letter, and he reads between the lines and says, oh my gosh, this letter means that they want to start a war, and they're asking me to do something I can't do. Right? And by the way, when the king gets the letter, it doesn't say that you're also receiving all this cash, etc. He just gets a letter. So he says, oh my gosh, it's an alibi. They want to start a war, right? They're looking for some pretense, I should say, to start a war. So that's why the king tears his garments. No? Now, one other point. The gift included 10 new suits. Right? If the gift is going to the king, so then tearing your garment ain't such a big deal because you've just put in a new suit. Right? Apparently, the gift is not for the king. When Elisha hears about this, Pasuk Ches, so Elisha sends a messenger to the king, why did you tear your clothing? Let him come to me, let him know that there's a Navi. Power!
Right.
Is this the way you speak to a king? Second person, Lama Karata Bigodecha? Aren't you supposed to speak to the king in, more official, fancier? But Elisha, don't go for that. Who's the boss? Right? Let him come to me. Let him know there's a Navi. Mm-hmm. So Naaman comes with his entire entourage, Suso Berifbo, and he stands by Elisha's house. But Elisha tries to show that he's the power. And therefore Elisha sends the messenger out. He doesn't even engage, right? Elisha doesn't engage with him directly. And then there's this psukim that we did already. Naaman's anger. Naaman says, all the rivers that I have are better, etc. And afterwards, Elisha refuses to accept the gift. Now, let's just stop on this for a moment. Pasuk Tesvav. Right? Elisha, Tesvav, Tezayin. Elisha says, I'm not taking any gift. Why does Elisha not want a gift? So one approach is, because if you give me a gift,
then
shows that you have some
power over me,
and Elisha is the only answer to the Almighty.
Right?
That's one approach. I think that's a good approach. That would fit into our entire theme.
Yeah.
Rashi does not learn like that. Rashi writes, Rashi says the reason he didn't take the gift is because some of the money of Avodah Zarah was mixed in.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
And al pi halacha, apparently Rashi feels that demei Avodah Zarah is usur. Money that you got in exchange for Avodah Zarah is forbidden. This is halachically very questionable. The Gemara of Avodah Zarah of Samach Dalet Paskins that the Mei Avodah Zarah biyad umikuchavim is mutter. There's a Rashi earlier in Avodah Zarah which says the Mei Avodah Zarah is usur. Tosis there in Daf Yud Beis asks the question on Rashi. Rashi, how do you think the Mei Avodah Zarah is usur on Daf Yud Beis? Gemara in Samach Dalet says it's mutter. So Rashi says that the Mei. So Tosis explains for Rashi that the Mei Avodah Zarah is going to be usur if the money is money from Avodah Zarah that's earmarked for Avodah Zarah. Even though usually we assume that ain muktzal Avodah Zarah, ain hektash Avodah Zarah, but if money came from Avodah Zarah and is earmarked to Avodah Zarah, then it's usur. That's probably the halachic explanation of this. That's what in Rashi. Yes.
I was going to ask if Naaman worshipped Avodah Zarah.
So Naaman worshipped Avodah Zarah, but then Naaman sort of converted to Judaism this perek. So because he worshipped Avodah Zarah, according to Rashi, he can't take the money.
Okay, that makes sense.
Now, the Malbim has a slightly different take. The Malbim says that the reason why Elisha doesn't want to receive the money is because there's another prohibition, the prohibition of I'm not allowed to do business with non-Jews 3 days before the festival because they might thank their deity.
That's the first page of Avodah Zarah.
They might thank their deity. So the Malbim writes, the reason why is because he is worried that if I'm going to take a gift, now you have to realize, I'm a choshev person. If I take a gift from you, so you think that, oh my gosh, he takes me seriously. He accepted my gift. And then you'll go and you'll thank your Avodah Zarah. That's, to a certain extent, the opposite of what we said until now. Again, it's a detailed approach, but...
So this is not my thinking. What? That if he accepts his gift, that he also accepts the Avodah Zarah?
At this point, the concern was that maybe he would go and thank Avodah Zarah, but then we'll see in two psukim from now, or three psukim from now, that Naaman gives up on Avodah Zarah. We'll see that in a minute.
Okay?
Yud Zayin. Naaman says, V'lo yukan na la'avdecha masat semek pradim adama. Why don't you give me 2 mules worth of earth? Right, Naaman says, I am only going to serve Hashem. And you, Elisha, should give me a gift. Right? Listen to the turning of the tables. Right? First, Naaman wants to give a gift to Elisha. Elisha says no. So Naaman says, okay, you give me some land. Why is he asking for land?
Wait, who does?
But Naaman is saying, can you give me a bit of land, 2 mules worth of land?
It's not land in the sense of I own this property, you have to get off it. It's land, it's earth.
It's earth, dirt.
That's different from land like property.
Okay, why does he want dirt?
Because he wants to make an offering.
And why do you need dirt to make an offering?
Or is there?
So the answer is that in the Torah, the Mizbeach is a Mizbach Adama.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Naaman thinks that God is the real ruler, but maybe in his, pardon the expression, Goyish HaKav, he thinks that God is connected to this area of land. So he says, give me some land, because if I'm going to offer to God, I need dirt from this place. No?
He doesn't understand that God is everywhere.
Yes.
But nobody else did either.
Well, Jews did.
Oh, Jews did.
But everybody else thought that their God was the God of their church.
Of this area.
Correct.
So Naaman is saying, I will only offer sacrifices to God, but I need dirt from God's area to offer those sacrifices. So Elisha's not going to go for that, no? Because Elisha's trying to prove that God is everywhere. You know the Lubavitcher song, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, right?
Okay.
That's what he's trying to prove.
Okay, so if we're not allowed to say, well, what Naaman did or was trying to do was right, then how can you say, well, we must bring carbon out in the victory of God?
Whoa. What Naaman is not going to bring carbonos in the Beis HaMikdash, but he's going to be taking dirt back to his country and use that dirt to offer to God. That is a foreign concept in Judaism. We have Mokom Masha Yivchar Bo Hashem, right?
Is that national identity?
The dirt. Now, Naaman says in Pasuk Yudches, you know what, God should forgive me, but I'm still going to have to go and worship idols. In other words, Naaman just said, I only believe in Hashem, but realize that what?
Just
that I am still a servant to the king, and the king has his own national Avodah Zarah, and I still have to worship in Beit Rimon. I still have to worship in that national Avodah Zarah place. Right? And I'm going to bow down over there. Right? Not only am I going to be there while my king bows, but I will also have to bow myself, because that's what you have to do.
First crypto Jew.
And God should forgive me.
But one second.
Okay. Back to the power structure. Naaman is recognizing that, listen, I'm not the boss. Okay? The real boss is my king. And my king is going to make me bow down, and I've got to listen to my king. So I become a crypto Jew, as it were, because I worship Hashem, but I'm going to do it in a church. Right?
Yeah.
So, isn't it in this, in fact, saying that Naaman is acting like a politician? Because politicians say well, they say one thing, but it really
this is a very bad couple of weeks to talk about politicians and what they say. That's all I'm saying. Okay, now. Elisha tells Naaman, "Lech l'shalom, go in peace," and then he goes away. Now, there's a whole question about whether goyim are mitzuv on Kiddush Hashem. A Jew would not be allowed to worship in a church, to worship God in a church. That's the avera of, or even if you're believing in God, but Kiddush Hashem means that you have to be killed rather than serve God in the church. Or goyim avgim Kiddush Hashem, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in the Perek Sora Moria, has a question, and they try to prove it from this episode of Elisha. When Elisha tells Naaman, go in peace, is he saying, oh, do it, and goyim are not mitzuvah in Kiddush Hashem? Or is he saying, don't do it? Or is he saying, don't bother me? It's not clear. Elisha says, go away. It's not clear whether he's endorsing Naaman's statement that I will worship God in church. Unclear. Right?
See, well, every time I read this story, I was getting to think it's a very interesting story. But it seems to me like just to say the go in peace is, I get it, do what you have to do.
Maybe.
I
get it, do what you have to do. Or maybe it's go away. It could be many different things. But maybe it's a full endorsement also. It's not clear. Fine. Now, the parenting thing is that let's just...
That could be a full endorsement.
Go in peace! Do it! Gevaldik!
He didn't say Gevaldik.
No, but he said...
He spoke Yiddish, of course.
But he said that I kept God, but yeah, I have to still worship of his daughter because my
king makes me. And then, again, it's not clear exactly. The Gemara in Sanhedrin raises that as a question. Now, Gehazi. Gehazi, Elisha's Na'ar. Right now, power structure. Gehazi, Na'ar Elisha Ishalokim means Gehazi is low on the power structure. He's supposed to be subservient to Elisha. So Gehazi speaks all properly. He speaks about, Hine chasach Adoni et Naaman ha'arami hazeh. He said that you spare Naaman the Arami, you refuse to take any gift, but I want to run after him and I want to take something from him. That's what Gehazi says. Now, first of all, Gehazi is speaking about Naaman in very derogatory terms. Naaman the Arami. Right? That's like derogatory. The only other person on this Arami is Lava. Not so good. Now, Gehazi goes, Vayirdof Gehazi Achare Naaman, and Naaman sees that he's Ratz Achara. Vayirdof and Ratz are two different words. Ratz means I'm just running quickly. Vayirdof means I'm pursuing. Right? Gehazi falls off the chariot, and he says, is everything okay? He said, everything is fine. My master sent me because two boys came, they are B'nei HaNevi'im, and we need the gifts to take care of them. This is a bold-faced lie. Gehazi says, give the gift because two boys came, there ain't no two boys, Elisha never said to give the gifts, etc. So Naaman says, yeah, take two talents. 1 second. How many talents of silver did Gehazi, did Naaman have at the beginning?
Ten.
He says, take two. Why is Naaman saying take two? Maybe Naaman is sensitive that there's something a little weird over here. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe he's picking up. So he says, okay, take two talents, right? And then he urged him, and he found 2 talents of silver in bags and 2 changes of clothing. There were 10 changes of clothing sent originally. He gives it to his boys, and they carry it away. Now, effectively, What Naaman is doing is he's saying, I don't trust this Gehazi. I'm worried he's going to take it for himself. So he sends his boys with Gehazi to check, maybe Gehazi is appropriating the funds for himself. Then, when he comes to the Ophel, he comes like this fortress in the hill, so he takes, Gehazi takes the, remember, Gehazi doesn't get the money right away. The boys who are Naaman's boys are going with Gehazi, they're holding the money. Finally, when they get to the fortress, he takes the money and he puts it in the house and he tells the boys, go away. He puts the money in the fortress. In other words, Gehazi has just tricked Naaman. Naaman is on his case, thinking maybe he's going to steal from me. Gehazi proves I'm not stealing because I'm going to put the money here in the fortress. Look, put it here in the fortress, everything will be okay. Oh, guys, go home, go home. Right? So Gehazi faked him. So then Gehazi comes in, and Gehazi stands before Elisha, and Elisha says, where are you coming from? And he says, oh, I didn't go anywhere. So Elisha says, you're a liar. Loli bihalach kashafach ish me'amer kavto lekratecha. My heart wasn't with you when that man fell off his chariot to meet you. At the time that you took the money and you took the clothing, v'zeitim uchramim v'tzom uvakar v'abadim u'shvachot, and you took olives and vineyards. Where did Gehazi take olives and vineyards? He didn't. No? He only got garments. He only got 2 talents of silver. But Elisha knows, if you're stealing, you took other stuff also. Yeah. So, hey! And therefore, Elisha says, the tzarat of Naaman should stick onto you, and he left Mitzorah HaShaleg. Right? In other words, the tzarat of Naaman, which put Naaman into his place, and had Naaman recognize God, right? Elisha says, you deserve that tzarat. Because you are haughty. Right? Naaman's conceit is what caused this entire episode. Gehazi, you have the same level of conceit. You decide not to listen. So again, these are some of the points. I think next week I want to talk about a Rosh Hashanah topic. This last class before Rosh Hashanah. And that we could do that. And thank you for listening.